Final hour, Darren, Donnick, and Chase on this Tuesday afternoon. We're going to do a little swap. Mitch Light is first up. Clark Lee in the on-deck circle. So we'll talk to Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee.
Light before Lee.
Yeah, that's right. Light before Lee. Mitch Light from The Athletic. Dan Mullen out as Florida's coach. You know we've talked a lot this season about Dan Mullen. I just want to know from you, how much of this was the winning and losing? Winning, I should say, lack of this season in particular, and at the end of last year. And how much of it, in your opinion, is a lot of the shenanigans, the recruiting comment that was, you know, maybe taken way out of whack, out of line several weeks ago, the stunt that he pulled against Missouri last year at the Swamp, all the stuff that comes with Dan Mullen. How would you break down, you know, what – was it 50-50? How would you break down what was the end result and why Dan Mullen is out today?
I'm going to use a term that was used that Christian Capel, our University of Washington writer, used in his postmortem on the Jimmy Lake era. It wasn't any one thing; it was everything. And I think that's similar situation. And their situations are similar. Those two guys. I mean, obviously Jimmy Lake doesn't have the background of success as a head coach that Dan Mullen had. I think it's a little bit of everything. Usually in coaching, it's wins and losses, and that obviously going 2-6 in the SEC is not wise if you're the Florida coach. It's inexcusable, pretty much. But I think there's two ways you can look at it. One is he, you know, had a team that was not really threatening the college football playoff, but was a top eight team last year and won the SEC East. And okay, he had a down year. You know, what are we doing here, firing a coach? But then if you're Scott Strickland, the AD, you take a big picture of you, and you say, okay, we were 2-6 this year. Our talent, I watched the games. Our talent isn't nearly what Georgia is. I follow the recruiting rankings, and you know the quote unquote rankings aren't everything. But he knows who the good players, and for every one or two elite top 100-ish players that Florida's getting, Georgia's getting eight, Alabama's getting eight or nine, and even maybe this is just stop the bleeding. And Dan Mullen, yeah, I don't know about within the. I think Florida fans liked him fine when he was winning. But he's not the most likable guy in the industry. If you just saw Eli Drinkwitz's quote, I think a lot of coaches feel that way about him. So I think it was everything and Florida just kind of stopping the bleeding before it got too profuse. Like it just it wasn't going to get any better. Now could Florida bounce back and have some nice seasons and go 6-2, 7-1, and compete for the East? Sure. But the way things were going at Florida with the recruiting and everything else, I think it's pretty clear that Dan Mullen was not going to really threaten Georgia and start winning SEC titles.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those deals where it's kind of like the grumpy coach or the coach who doesn't care to have a relationship with anybody. You know, you say, well, you know, that's fine, but you better do a whole lot of winning. And so I guess when it comes to Dan Mullen, all the – stuff that comes with him, it's okay when you're winning 11 games, you know, when you go 11-2 like you did in 2019, or you go 10-3 your first year, like it's okay. But if you're going to do all that stuff and then you're not going to win and you're not going to win the recruits, it's you can see why.
Yep.
So what happened, Mitch? Because think about it. They were like they were over a 3-touchdown favorite over a bad LSU team last year and lost at home. And then they go to the SEC, you know, then they play Alabama in the SEC championship game, and they play a fun game. They lose by 6, 52-46. Then they go to a bowl game and they get absolutely hammered by Oklahoma, and then this season, where even you could look at it back at the beginning, that Alabama game, they went back and forth with Alabama, lost by a touchdown, and then like ever since then, it's just been like, what's happened to Florida?
Yeah, I mean that's the question. Somewhere along the way, it went bad. Now the Alabama game, they played they got down big and they fought back. And I don't know if they exposed some weaknesses in Alabama. They did it, you know, via the run game. You just look at that team, and I don't want to keep talking about recruiting, but it's just they don't have enough elite players. Like some of the Florida teams that won the national title are Steve Spurrier's elite athletes all over the place. Now I'll counter that and say they had three first-round draft picks, or three receivers from the team 2 years ago, I believe, that are in the NFL now. And that goes to Dan Mullen's ability to develop players and all that. But, you know, the quarterback position, you know, here's something, too, and this is not an original thought. I've seen this. Imagine if Felipe Franks doesn't get hurt against Kentucky 2 years ago. Does Kyle Trask ever play at Florida? You know, maybe he transferred. Well, he stuck around for so long, but, like, that's not a shot at Dan Mullen. I mean, Trask had a great year in his year as a starter there, but they haven't been great at the quarterback position. Emory Jones is inconsistent. You know, a lot of the fans wanted Anthony Richardson this year. He was in and out of the, you know, injuries and all that stuff. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say the players don't like playing for him. How would I know that? But when you have the talent that they do, it's just there's no excuse for the way they played this year, the Samford game. And then the Missouri game, I don't know if you guys watched the end of the Missouri game. It was just bizarre. I don't care how much little faith you have in your quarterback, and I don't remember the exact situation, but they got in regulation, I think they got the ball back at their 30 with a minute to go, and they sat on the ball. I mean, you're University of Florida. I mean, Steve Spurrier, I wonder what he was thinking if he was watching that game. They didn't even try. And I mean, I'm always one that said, like, I don't care what your record is. If you're going to try, if you're going to do something to win a game, it shouldn't matter what your record is. People say, oh, you're 2-6 in the league, or 2-5 in the league. Who cares? Well, I don't care what your record is. If you want to instill a kind of a winning attitude in your team, you don't sit on the ball at the 30-yard line with a minute to go. It's not like they had the ball at the 10 and you make a mistake. You know,
right?
I was floored by that.
And it's Missouri's defense, and I know it's gotten better, but my goodness, it's Missouri's defense. But anyway, let me ask the question that Willie would ask you if he was.
But I'm here. Wouldn't I ask the question myself?
Well, I know, but you're going to.
Do I not get a turn to ask Mitch some questions? Asking my questions now.
No, not yet.
It's been 2 weeks since I talked to him.
I know. I haven't had a chance to talk to Mitch.
Well, I don't want to pivot from this just yet. So this is last one. Willie's going to say, well, how are you going to do better? Like, this is too premature. This is too soon. Like, how are you going to do it any better than Dan Mullen?
Because it's very costly, right? There's a huge price tag to this.
But think about this, Mitch. In fairness to what Willie's going to say is, they went 10-3 the first year. They went 11-2. They went 8-4 last year when they had to play all conference games, so they didn't even get the four bunnies. And then we know what this year's been. So I'll say that. And on this particular one, I'll side with Willie. Like, what do you think you're going to get better at Florida?
Yeah, I mean, it's fair. And you think about Florida, for as good as a job that is and how much that program has going for it, it's also the school where Ron Zook, Will Muschamp, Jim McElwain. I mean, they've fired some coaches there. You know, they've hit two home runs, but Urban Meyer was a home run that fell into their lap. I mean, everyone knew that Urban Meyer was a home run. All they had to do when they hired him was convince him not to go to Notre Dame, which was something because he was, you know, he'd been an assistant there. And so my feeling always has been, if you don't, sure, there's like, be careful what you wish for, I get that, but if you don't like the direction of your program, doesn't mean you don't try to do better. Now, they might not do better. They might hire Billy Napier and find out that, man, wish we still had Dan Mullen. But you know how big business of college football works. Once the fan base is kind of checked out on you, it's very, very difficult to win them back. And then the fan base is checked out on Dan Mullen. I don't like the fact that this is where we are in college sports and we're changing coaches every 3 years rather than 5 years back in the good old days, but that's the way we are. And Florida's sitting there saying, okay, look what Georgia's doing. Why can't we do what Georgia's doing? And there's some reasons why they can't, some reasons why they should be doing close to what Georgia's doing. So I never fault a program for trying to get better. It's just, but we can sit here and say, okay, well, you better get this one right. Well, you know what? If they don't get it right, they'll try it again in 3 years. And it's still the University of Florida, and there's going to be an attractive list of candidates. So, but I understand that sentiment.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic. All right, Mitch, Heisman Trophy ballot. Right now, what do you got?
Yeah, I try not to be. Yeah, we do one every week in The Athletic, and I try to hold off on the, okay, Bryce Young throws for a ton of yards, his team is really good. It's just there's not a ton of – there's a lot of good candidates. There's some great candidates this year. So, I mean, I kind of fell into the trap this week. I think I had C.J. Stroud 1, Bryce Young 2, and Jordan Davis 3. I had Kenneth Walker on my ballot for several weeks in Michigan State. I tried to be look a little different, you know, different guys around the country. But at this point, I think it's going to be Stroud or Young, whoever has a stronger finish. Now, the thing about Stroud is anybody who follows Ohio State probably tell you this. He's, I'd say at best, the third, maybe fourth or fifth best offensive player on their team as far as just overall skill. And, you know, Trayvon Henderson, their running back's outstanding. Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave and Jackson Smith and Jigba. They've got some elite skill players, but we know how this works. You know, the quarterback's going to get all the attention. And he's been very good. I mean, he was great against Michigan State, but he is throwing to elite receivers, and he's got a great offensive line.
So it's the Gino Toretta kind of thing. That's the pathway to the Heisman for him, perhaps. Mitch, let me throw this at you. The Cincinnati wins out in this hypothetical, and Notre Dame wins out in this hypothetical. So Notre Dame has one loss. It's to Cincinnati. Cincinnati is undefeated with the win at Notre Dame. Do either of them get into the championship here, to the Final Four?
Sure. I mean, obviously it depends what happens. If Ohio State beats Michigan and wins the Big Ten championship game, Cincinnati is in great position. Now it could come down to, because in theory, you know, that would obviously bump Michigan out. Oklahoma State's kind of a wild card in this. How does the committee view? I'd be interested. They were 7 last week. See where they are. You know, they might be 6 or 5 this week. Probably 6. How does the committee view them if they have to beat Oklahoma twice? I should know this. I haven't done all the math. Like, I guess it'd be probably be Oklahoma once and Baylor once would be it. So how does the committee view them? So Cincinnati's obviously in much better shape than Notre Dame because they beat, you know, they have a better record and they beat them head to head. And Cincinnati's not getting in with one loss, obviously. So I think there are scenarios where Cincinnati and Notre Dame both get in.
The thing that
I mean, let's
Cincinnati
say,
for sure with the inside track they need Notre Dame to stay with the one loss, right? Because that's their crown jewel.
Yeah, pretty much. So like Georgia beats Alabama, and Ohio State beats Michigan, then it's probably Georgia, Ohio State, Cincinnati, Notre Dame. Now here's the thing, I get this.
So Cincinnati could go over Alabama in a scenario.
Oh yeah, I think the general thinking, and this was my next point, Willie, the general thinking is that Alabama's done if they lose to Georgia. Now, I would argue that I don't understand if you're doing rankings and you have Alabama second or third, and if they play a competitive game against the team that everyone believes is the best team in the country by far, how are they not as good because they lost by 8 or 10 to that team? But I understand how rankings work. If they lose a second game, they will fall. That's why I was a little surprised the committee had them ranked second the whole time, because it's a lot easier to drop them from third or fourth to fifth than it is from second to fifth or sixth with a loss to the number one team. That's just intuitively, that seems weird. But I think what we'll see tonight is Ohio State jump Alabama because Ohio State's been so impressive. So I think if Georgia wins and Ohio State wins, then Cincinnati and Notre Dame are both in very good shape with Oklahoma State being the wild card.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic, and I'll just hit you with one. I threw this at a friend of mine the other day.
Am I a friend of yours, Chase?
You are a friend of mine, so that's okay, why good. I'm going to throw this at you too.
Okay.
Let's say Luke Fickell leaves Cincinnati, which I think with all these jobs that are opening, there's a good possibility of that, even though they're moving into the Power Five. I said to him, Hugh Freeze, I think, will be your next head coach. What do you think?
I don't know enough about Cincinnati to know if they would make that hire. I think Marcus Freeman would be their next head coach, the very popular defensive coordinator who's now in his first year at Notre Dame. Cincinnati's an interesting job. They're always the example I use as a school that's like I talked about. I'm not saying Cincinnati's a better football program than Florida, but look at all the coaches that have failed at Florida. Look at all the coaches that have succeeded at Cincinnati. Really, recently, the only coach that has not succeeded is Tommy Tuberville, who succeeded in the SEC. I know it's a different level. Expectations are different. But as far as winning, maxing out, more coaches at Cincinnati have won consecutively than a lot of other programs. So I think it's a very good job. There's something in the DNA there that is just that helps the coaches are winning. So I hadn't thought of Hugh Freeze at Cincinnati. If that happens, I'll be the first to say I heard it from Chase. But my guess would be Marcus Freeman. Yes.
Yeah, they hired Butch Jones and Tommy Tuberville. I'm sure they're capable of hiring Hugh Freeze. So I don't think that's beneath them.
Butch Jones was he was up and he very, very successful at Central Michigan. He was a good hire at Cincinnati by the time. And not to revisionist history, Butch Jones was a good hire at Tennessee. It just didn't work out. But he had the resume of a coach that would be successful in Tennessee.
Good stuff. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Now that I switched with Clark, I think I get a good call plays and make some personnel decisions for Saturday since we switched spots. But so I'll take that up with him.
As I say, you can take that up with him. That's
see what you disagree with after he comes on with us, Mitch, and then we'll circle back.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah.
Mitch Light from The Athletic. Chase, tell everybody about BetMGM.
I will do it. BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, welcomes you with a special offer on Thanksgiving weekend football. It's my favorite. Simply place a $10 moneyline wager on any pro or college game, and if any team scores a touchdown in any Thanksgiving weekend game, you'll win $200 in free bets regardless of your bet's outcome. It's that easy. Just use the bonus code 1025GAME200 when you make your first bet. Feast on the football action all weekend with BetMGM's live betting options, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Tennessee only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bet or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.
We keep this thing rolling along here on this Tuesday afternoon. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Our show is presented by Kratian CBD. Kratian CBD products curated for life. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. Now we head over to Weston and talk with Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee. Good afternoon, Coach. How you doing?
Doing very well. How are y'all doing?
We're doing fantastic. You guys get to wrap up your season rivalry game, like a lot of schools, which are cool. Rivalries are great. And what's cool about this is, yeah, you could be an outsider and come in and be the head coach of Vanderbilt and understand that the game against Tennessee is a big deal. But for you, it's a little bit different, and that's what I like about it. This is a rivalry you truly understand.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this was a game that we were focused on probably since I was just out of the womb, honestly. So, you know, I've been watching
in the blood.
Know, for
that puts it in perspective.
From very early days.
That truly puts it in perspective right there.
That's right.
And now you get to go through it. In all seriousness, because, you know, of your background, you know, this is something that you've thought about and you understand. And so I know you've conveyed that to your kids, and I know they understand that too, but I like the fact that you're able to probably put a little bit more of the, you know, the whipped cream, the nuts, and the cherry on top of it to truly paint the picture of what this game means.
Yeah. And you know, honestly, they have a pretty good awareness. I think part of the challenge as a coach in these games is the bigger the game, the smaller the focus needs to be on the things that are going to need to be done at a high level to win the game. And so you acknowledge the emotion around it. We're all excited for it. And now it's going to be about honing in on the preparation so that we can have the chance to be at our very best on Saturday. We know we're playing against a good team. This is obviously a very good offense, and anytime you're on the road in this league, it's going to be a challenge, but we're excited for it, and we need to have a great week and again, go out and represent Team One more time and build on the things that we've been able to, the foundation we've been able to set so far this season.
And you just had quite the tune-up to get ready for this. Back-to-back road games to finish out your season against two offensive-minded teams and coaches, for sure. I thought you guys, a nice fight again against Ole Miss. And I know, let's going back to conversations we had even last week, I know you want to start talking about those victories and not just talking about the fight. But I do want to ask you, you just had the Ole Miss game and now this Tennessee game, and yes, a team that will get up and down the field, they're going to move at an extremely fast pace. We all know that. So what challenges does an offense like Tennessee have present for your defense?
Well, I mean, it's the tempo is stressful, and it's not just a defensive issue. This is about how all three phases kind of interlock to fight against this. Can we have, you know, game control on our offense? The difference from last week and this weekend we need to punctuate drives with touchdowns, right? We had three field goals in the first half. If we could have finished those drives off, now all of a sudden you're talking about a much different game to start the second half. And so offensively, our offense will have a hand in fighting against the Tennessee offense. Special teams, obviously, in coverage units. You know, we had two long returns on Saturday. One was a kickoff return that ended up in a fourth down stop for our defense that was in the tight red zone. Again, that set up a backed up play or a backed up sequence for us on offense that finished with a punt that was returned deep into our territory that ended up in the touchdown. So we have to cover better. We have to make Tennessee go the long, hard way. They have a dynamic return game that's going to, again, challenge our coverage units. We have to step up in those areas. And then finally, defensively, you know, can we commit to the effort required in between snaps to make sure that we're lined up in a stance playing aggressively? We can't allow them to steal, like, our fighting spirit on defense. Can we commit in between the whistles to a standard of play that doesn't waver even as drives extend? And I thought, on the whole, we were able to do that against Ole Miss, obviously not perfectly. But we need to build on that performance and go a little further and deeper in this prep to ensure that we're playing at our highest level on defense each snap that we play. So it's all three phases that are responsible for the win. We have to interlock together. Obviously, we know that the strength of that Tennessee team is that dynamic offense, and we have to kind of be united here in our performance to win.
Talking to Clark Lee, head football coach at Vanderbilt, big game against Tennessee in the season finale coming up. Coach, you have to like what you see from Rocco Griffin, not only just the results he got for you, over 100 yards rushing, but also just fighting back when you have an injury like that. That's not easy to do, but he's getting back and he's playing really, really well.
Yeah, and I think the kind of story within the story is he had one injury he was overcoming, and as we started Kentucky prep, he got banged up in practice, and you know he was in the plan against Kentucky, but ended up not, you know, really having enough time in preparation to feel like he was going to be able to perform at a high level. And we didn't want to. It's unfair to everybody, you know. I mean, you got to practice, particularly when you're coming off an injury that has kept you out for some time. So what I saw in that was a player that was intent on impacting winning. He was incredible in prep that week, even as he knew he probably wasn't going to play. He was, you know, a positive life force on our sideline during the game that gave energy and impacted our performance. And he came back this past week and had a great week of practice. And when his number was called, he was ready to go. And I thought he saw some tough running. He saw speed. He saw competitive decisions at the finishes. You know, I was thrilled for him and excited to watch him build on that performance this week.
Okay, Clark, so you just mentioned it. Your family goes way back. You're a Nashville guy, a lot of Vanderbilt. So when you were a kid, what's an early memory maybe of Vanderbilt football that sort of got you on board? Do you have that? Because you know, hopefully you had a choice. Maybe you didn't have a choice in your family. You were Vanderbilt all the way, but something had to sort of get you on board where you had that emotional attachment.
Well, I mean, I think like any kid, you kind of follow the lead of your parents. And we were at an alumni event in Memphis during the bye week, and I happened across Andy McCarroll, who played here in the late 80s, and I was laughing with him because I had a picture on my dresser growing up that was from like the fan day event, and it was me and Andy McCarroll. And I had a quick text message home and got the picture sent via text, and me and Andy kind of laughed at it. But you know, like when I was growing up, this is what we did. We pulled for Vanderbilt. My dad brought me to games. I can remember, you know, him, you know, he was always going to find a way to park illegally somewhere so he could get in for free.
We've all got our secret spots, right? We all got our places. We don't tell anybody.
We weren't counting steps back then, but I'm telling you, like, the miles of traverse on our campus. And I swear to you, it was like, these would be like the weirdest back alleys that he must have found when he was a student here.
Yeah, Clark, y'all are going to get rid of some of those with all these facilities you're trying to build.
That's the goal. You know, all of this is meant to just end the illegal parking. But no, it's those memories and those moments. I mean, our stadium to me is like, it's just, yeah, and in the off season and this past summer, you know, I'll go in there at times and just kind of walk around. But I mean, there is a clear line to my personal history represented in that stadium, and that's boyhood memories, that's high school memories, that's, you know, playing in high school memories. This was the old Clinic Bowl site, so much of that stirs up emotions for me, and certainly, you know, every kid has memories of Thanksgiving Day and Thanksgiving football. And for us, what was a fun Saturday of playing outside, playing football in the backyard, watching the NFL games that were on, gave way to a Saturday where we're going to be cheering on Vanderbilt against Tennessee. And so certainly a part of my childhood experience. And, I'm excited to pass that along to my kids.
We're talking to Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, as they take on Tennessee. So kind of along these lines, it's funny Willie went down this road, because I was going to ask you what it was like the first time, whether it was as a fan or a player, going into Neyland Stadium and knowing the history there of being and now being the road team. You've obviously played the road games this year, but taking Team 1 into Neyland Stadium for the first time, kind of what you're expecting to feel and what you felt the first time you went there.
So I played there, you know, because I was three seasons here. The first game against Tennessee was what used to be known as Adelphia Coliseum, now is Nissan Stadium, but we played at the Titans' home.
That's right.
Good game.
I was at that game.
Yep, we were dressed in all gold that day, which was an interesting combination. But the second year we went, we played in Knoxville, and that it was just a, you know, we were banged up. It was a tough way to finish the year. It was disappointing. Then the final year, my final year, it was senior day here at home, and we kind of fought with them tooth and nail. Had the ball in the end there to tie it. Weren't able to do it, and obviously a disappointing finish. But I did feel like, you know, as I left and I went to UCLA to be a graduate assistant, I remember, like, opening the LA Times, or, you know, back then I guess there used to be newspapers that were laying around the office, and Vanderbilt football was pictured in the sports section because they started the season 4-0, and that season was Cutler to Bennett, to finish. So, like, you feel like the work that we put in my time as a player gave way to, both the start to that next season and obviously the punctuation with the road win there to finish it. And then the last experience I had there was in 2009 with UCLA. And I was coaching linebackers, and we came back to Knoxville, and actually Coach Kiffin was the head coach there, and we were able to win a big game on the road. It was a great environment and a great day. So there's been a few ventures that way, and again, excited to add another chapter.
I was at that UCLA game. That was a day game, and I didn't realize you were on that staff.
I was out there.
There was some big boys, if I remember, on that D-line. You guys harassed Tennessee that game. Big time.
It was a good day. It was a back and forth, as I remember, and I think it was either our third game or our fourth game, but we started the season that year 3-0 or 4-0, and it was a big celebration in the locker room afterwards. A lot of excitement for us. So I think anytime, you know, the environments in this league are so they're so fun to compete in, and so, you know, going on the road, getting a win in an SEC stadium is a fun thing to experience.
No doubt, Clark. We always enjoy the visits. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family on Thursday. Best of luck on Saturday, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you guys too. And by the way, thanks so much for having me on this season. It's been a lot of fun to spend this time every week, and I look forward to doing this next season, and also spending a lot of time talking about wins moving forward.
I love it. No doubt. It's the other way around. We really thank you for your time every Tuesday, and we've enjoyed it. Thanks for doing this.
All right, guys. Y'all take care.
That is Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee. And, yes, we've been talking to him every Tuesday in the final hour of our show. It is Thanksgiving on Thursday. We all know that. We've been talking about it this week, and it is time for you to be thankful for free bets. You know what I'm going to be talking about right now. I'm talking about DraftKings Sportsbook. Yes, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. And they've got a Turkey Day no-brainer. New customers can bet just $1 on any Thanksgiving NFL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a point. Well, I can tell you on this show, we've made it abundantly clear today, like Detroit is the play. So if you think Detroit is going to win, then that means they're going to have to score at least a point. So keep that in mind. All DraftKings customers can also get in on the new same-game parlay offer that's sweeter than grandma's pumpkin pie. And I know we're going to be experiencing that on Thursday. And for the Thanksgiving games, all customers can get a risk-free bet up to $25 if your same-game parlay doesn't win. All you have to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use that code 1025GAME and bet just $1 on any Thanksgiving NFL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a point. That code again, 1025GAME, this Thanksgiving at DraftKings Sportsbook. Remember, you must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. Thank you, Jim. Don't forget our pregame show, Corner Pub in Bellevue, this Sunday, leading up to the Patriots game. Yes, Titans and Foxborough to take on New England. The pregame show will be from 9:30 until 11:30 in the morning. Go hang out at Corner Pub in Bellevue. That's at 8058 Tennessee Highway 100 prior to that Titans game. And, oh, by the way, you might as well just stick around and watch, right, with all the other Titans fans. The pregame show is brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Of course, that show will have Jared Stillman, Mark Howard, and forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. Go up to Chris. He's a really good guy. Just don't ask him for a pick.
And that's a good spot, Corner Pub in Bellevue. I had my first drink there.
Okay.
I did.
Everybody remembers the first.
Like, in quotations, drink there.
Yeah. First legal. Yep.
Were you of age?
I was, yeah.
Okay.
It
was not a fudging of the...
Did you want him to incriminate?
Yeah, we'll see.
The
Corner
Pub
Maybe we
Bellevue?
Shouldn't go there. We shouldn't go there.
No, it was my 21st birthday.
Okay. All right, there you go. Now
the old man took me in there for a beer.
Okay.
So it was a good time.
There were some push-up pops, like ice. What are they called? You freeze them. You know, the colored things, I don't know what they're exactly called.
Push pops?
No, they're not push pops, because the push pops are the orange, right? Like you get at Chewy's for the kids. No, what's basically the frozen colored ice?
Oh.
What's the plastic? You push it up and you
Otter
drink
pops?
The juice. Is that what they're called?
I think that's like a brand of them.
Okay. Because I don't know what the official name of them. You know, we've all done them. We've all had them many, many, many times. Well, I didn't even realize it, but we had some friends up from Atlanta not too long ago, and apparently they weren't a hit because it didn't look like anybody touched them. But I guess Bud Light Seltzer has these now. They make these, of course, with alcohol. And Maddox came up to me the other day and was like, hey, Dad, can I have one of these? And I was like, because I kind of looked at it like, that doesn't look like the typical, right, they're in the clear plastic. You can tell, right, if it's grape or if it's orange or if it's red. You know, cherry, whatever. You can see the color, right? And I'm like, oh, that looks those look different. Did they change the wrapper? And I looked at it, and I was like, no, that you can't have those. Why? And I was like,
I just sent you a picture. These, is this what you're talking about?
You just sent me a picture?
Yeah, well, the group. To make sure we're talking about the same
thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
But they don't have that on them.
Yeah, Otter Pops is what.
Okay, that's not.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's the same concept.
Same concept, yep. Same concept.
I mean, flavor, yeah, people are saying freaky. Flavor Ice, Pop Ice.
I think Flavor Ice Pops. Is probably what I've thought I've called them before. But I was like, yeah, no, you can't have those. Those are for adults. And he's like, why? What's different? And I'm like, well, it's got something in here you can't have. He's like, oh, okay. I was like, alcohol, Maddox, so put it away. I don't even know how they got in the freezer, but I'd never even seen those. So I guess Bud Light Seltzer's making these now?
I don't know. Ryan T. on our text line apparently calls me Jared Jr., which isn't possible because I'm actually older than Jared, but whatever. They're called Flavor Ice Pops. But they're also called Otter Pops because I just looked it up.
Yeah,
but
I think I call them Flavor Ice. I think that's what I kind of referred to them as, I think, over the years. But I wasn't positive. So it sounds like they've got multiple names, like people call them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're different brands. It's, you know, like most things.
So let's get back to, like, you compared. You're Jared Jr. So what's going on there?
I don't know.
That's the first time I think we've had that reference on the
show. I've seen that on Twitter.
Really?
And I don't know if this is the same guy.
Why is that?
Called me Jared Jr. I don't know. I guess I said something that he viewed as outlandish and didn't agree with it. So,
okay.
Whatever. Freezy Pops, Cool Pops. Oh, yeah, I've seen Cool Pops.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like that's why I asked the question, because it seems like there's many acceptable answers. And I don't even know what made me think of that. But anyway, good stuff there from Clark Lee. You know, we didn't really get a chance to address what Tim Hasselbeck told us last hour, where he just kind of slid in, oh, yeah, Jason Garrett, don't be surprised. By the way, Jason Garrett was let go today, which tells this is how you always know it's the beginning of the end for coaches, right? This is the beginning of the end for Joe Judge. They think that firing their staff members is going to save their job. I guess maybe sometimes that works, but more times than not, it doesn't work. Because remember, Dan Mullen did do that this year, right? Others have done that, and it doesn't work.
Well, I think Dave Gettleman's probably going to be looking for a job, too.
I was going to say, probably Gettleman is, I would say, next up, the GM. So maybe Joe Judge does survive. I don't know.
I don't see it.
I don't either. I think they're going to clean house. Jason Garrett was fired as the OC. And Tim just kind of threw out there, like, don't be surprised if he's not in the mix for some of these college jobs. And I was like, whoa. Were you guys surprised as me?
I wasn't surprised at the idea. I don't know if it'll be one of the cream of the crop Florida, LSU, USC type of things. But that next level, I think he would be really attractive.
Like tell us a team. Like who?
Well, like a Cincinnati.
Okay.
Somewhere in there.
I would even say, yeah, well, Cincinnati going into a Power 5. Virginia Tech is interesting. Now, what is Jason Garrett interested in? That's the question. Does he want to be in the state of Texas? Does he want to be in the Northeast where he went to college at Princeton way, way back when in that area of the country? Does he want to be in the Atlantic region somewhere? These are all questions because it's not like he needs money, but I think he might be looking for a fresh start, and some school out there might be saying, yeah.
Well, the BC coach is rumored, you know, he's on those lists, so maybe if he gets a job, then, you know, maybe Boston College, maybe? Like, for one, Virginia Tech, I don't see that because I already read to you guys what the AD said, and it sounds like they're looking for somebody who understands the program. So I can't imagine they're going to go hire an NFL coach that has no ties to the school, the university. That one would not make sense. Or then
let's
people
say,
would ask the AD,
okay,
what were you talking about?
I'll give you one. Let's say Dave Clawson is snapped up by somebody.
Okay.
Wake Forest.
Which I think
Wake
there's
Forest.
A very good chance of that. Yeah, yep. Wake could be, yep. That could be something.
I see some ACC jobs that would be attracted to Jason Garrett, and Jason Garrett could see himself there.
I guess the question I would have, without knowing Jason Garrett, like you said, he's made his money. He's made tons of money. if you've been around the Dallas Cowboys facilities for a long, long time, and now the Giants, which, by the way, is a brand-new stadium, it's the NFL. Life in the NFL is very nice. Everything is five-star for the most part. Most organizations, at least the one he's been around the longest. Are you going to go coach at Wake Forest?
Wake Forest is pretty darn good right now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they've poured in a ton of money to their stadium right now. They've upgraded their facilities big time. Now, it depends on what's the challenge. Do you want
big time is relevant to what we're talking about? It's still nowhere near.
Well, nothing's going to compare to. Yeah, but nothing's going to compare to. Well, that's the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, I understand, but there's plenty of SEC.
There's no more.
Jerry knows how to spend money.
Oh, he does.
I don't know that Jason Garrett is an SEC guy. Now, here's another one. If David Cutcliffe moves on from Duke,
I was just about to say Duke. Huh. I think that job's going to be open.
Interesting.
I think I could see
That's
Cutcliffe retiring.
That's a good one. That is a good one.
I think Duke could very well be open. The ACC is intriguing because, like you said, Clawson could leave Wake and go Virginia Tech. I mean, he's been rumored to Virginia Tech, which is already open.
Virginia Tech is a different profile of school. It's more
Miami's probably going to be open. You know. Boston College could be open.
Boston College is an interesting one.
So, I mean, there could definitely be some moving pieces around there.
I think Tim's point, because it happened while he was on. It's not like mm-hmm. Now, you tried to ask a follow-up, Darren, as you know, had he put some thought into this prior, and I don't know the answer to that, but Tim, we know, has a pretty good network in the ACC. I see him as a fit for an ACC type of program, and I would just ask, you know, why not him based on all these other guys that you hear all the time every year? You know, some end up making it, some don't. Dave Clawson, his stock was about as low as it can get when he was ousted as the offensive coordinator for Tennessee. I mean, he just disappeared into thin air.
And I would also
and then
say
reappeared,
Forest,
and now he's one of the hottest names going.
Right, but Wake Forest also was not a hot spot either. It was way, way, way down on the list, too, and he's – They have, like you said.
No, I'm saying he's going to get offers to leave Wake Forest to go to a big time job. Nobody would have predicted that in 2000, whatever that was, 2005 or something. He wasn't he Fulmer's guy, uh-huh. the claw fence.
Yep,
like he was thrown out into oblivion, and then had to reinvent slowly and surely the Bowling Green. You know, Clark Lee was on his staff for a while.
Yeah, I don't know.
These coaches go through ebb and flow. It's pretty interesting how stock rises and falls on some guys.
But it's going to be, you know, after this weekend when other jobs open and then maybe some of these then you start to fill some of these big spots. I mean, the domino effect's going to be fun because that's what's going to happen. So maybe Jason Garrett does land one after some of the dominoes fall.
I would have never had him.
No, I wouldn't either.
Any of these radars. Now that Tim has said that, I'm really –
The other thing is, what would you pay him? Never having been a head coach, I don't know what his salary was in the NFL, but he's probably used to having a certain level. Would you throw a lot of money at him to bring him there? I don't know. That's a good question. What's his market value? He brings a lot of attention. Like Tim said, when you're the coach of the Dallas Cowboys for, what was it, about a decade? Maybe more?
Long time.
I mean,
he's got some recognition. He's going to bring attention to your program. People will be curious to see what he does.
No doubt.
And who would he bring on his staff? Another really good question.
The Rays have just paid someone 11 years, $185 million.
Someone? How about the top prospect in all of baseball?
Well, yeah, but $185 million from the Rays?
He's special.
Their stadium isn't even worth that.
That's right. That's why they do it now. He's only 20 years old. It's their only chance to get him.
They've renamed the stadium Wander Franco Stadium.
That's right. He gets the naming rights. That's part of the deal.
I would think so. They should change they should be called the Wander Francos. I mean,
do we question
the team name?
The Tampa Bay Montreal Wander Francos.
Yes. Do we question the Rays and how they operate business-wise? They're pretty smart.
So far they've proven they kind of know what they're doing. At least when it comes to on the field. They don't know about the off-the-field stuff.
Yeah, I question them when they pull a pitcher too soon, but you know, whatever.
Gets them there.
That'll do it for our show today. Enjoy this beautiful but cold Tuesday. We want you back with us tomorrow. We'll try to cram more stuff into tomorrow's show, including silly underdog picks. Have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. Stay tuned. Stillman & Company is next.